You're a witch. A witch? Zed asked in bewilderment. A witch? That's what I said. A witch.
John's dark eyes shifted to Richard and Kalen.
This doesn't concern you two. Our business is with the old man. Leave now, or you'll get the same as him.
Richard couldn't believe the men he knew were saying this. Kalen came forward, stepping in front of Zed, the folds of her dress swirling around her legs when she stopped. She held her fists at her sides. Leave now, she warned menacingly, before you come to regret what you have chosen to do. The mob of men looked around at each other, some smirking, some making crude comments under their breath, some laughing. Kalen stood her ground and stared them down. The laughter died out.
So, John said with a sneer, two witches to take care of.
The men cheered and hollered, brandishing their weapons. John's round, heavy-set face smiled defiantly. Richard stepped slowly and deliberately in front of Kalen, putting a hand behind as he did so, forcing her and Zed to step back. He kept his voice calm, friendly.
John, how's Sarah? I haven't seen you two for a while.
John didn't answer. Richard surveyed the other faces.
I know many of you. Know you to be good men. This isn't something you want to do.
He looked back to John.
Take your men and go home to your families.
Please, John?
John pointed an axe handle at Zed.
That old man's a witch. We're going to put an end to him.
He pointed at Kalen.
And her. Unless you want the same, Richard, be on your way.
The mob yelled their agreement. The torches sizzled and popped as they burned, and the air smelled of burning pitch and sweat. When they realized that Richard wasn't leaving, the rabble started to push forward. The sword was free in a blink. The men took a step back as the metallic ringing filled the night air. John stood in red-faced anger. The ringing died out, and the only sound was from the burning torches. Grumbling broke out about Richard being in with the witches. John charged, swinging the axe handle at Richard as he came. The sword flashed through the air, splintering John's weapon with a loud crack. Only 2 ragged inches of the axe handle were left above his fist. The severed piece of wood spun off into the darkness, landing somewhere with a hollow thud. John stood frozen, 1 foot on the ground, 1 on the porch, and the point of the sword of truth pressed to the underside of his ample chin. The polished blade glinted in the torchlight. Richard, his muscles hard with restrained need, slowly bent forward and with the sword point tilted John's face up to his own. In a voice barely more than a whisper, but so deadly cold it made John stop breathing, he said, "Another step, John, and your head follows." John didn't move, didn't breathe.
"Back away," Richard hissed.
The man did as he was ordered, but when back with his fellows, regained his nerve.
"You can't stop us, Richard. We're here to save our families."
"From what?"
Richard yelled. He pointed the sword at one of the other men.
"Frank, when your wife was sick, wasn't it Zed who brought her a potion that made her well?"
He pointed the sword to another.
"And Bill, didn't you come and ask Zed about the rains, when they would come so you fellows could harvest your crops?"
He whipped the sword's point back to his attacker.
"And John, when your little girl was lost in the woods, was it not Zed who read the clouds all night and then went out himself and found her and brought her back safe to you and Sarah?"
John and a few of the others cast their eyes downward. Richard angrily drove the sword back into its scabbard.
"Zed has helped most of the men here. He has helped heal your fevers, find lost loved ones, and freely shared anything he has with you."
From the back, someone yelled out,
"Only a witch could do all those things! He has done nothing to harm a single one of you!"
Richard paced back and forth across the porch, facing the men down.
"He has never harmed one of you. He's helped most of you. Why would you want to harm a friend?"
There was some confused grumbling for a few minutes before they regained their conviction.
"Most of the things he's done are magic!"
John shouted.
"A witch's magic! None of our families are safe with him around!"
Before Richard could answer, Zed was pulling him back by his arm. He turned to the old man's smiling face. "Zed, didn't seem to be bothered in the least. If anything, he seemed to be enjoying himself.
"Very impressive," he whispered. "Both of you, very impressive. If you would, though, let me handle it from here."
He lifted an eyebrow, then turned to the men.
"Gentlemen, good evening. How nice to see you all."
Some of the men gave a greeting in return. A few lifted their hats self-consciously.
"If you would be so kind, before you dispatch me, let me talk a moment with my two friends here."
There were nods all around. Zed pulled Kalin and Richard back a little toward the house, away from the crowd, and bent close.
"A lesson in power, my friends."
He put a stick-like finger on Kalin's nose.
"Too little."
Next, he put the finger on Richard's nose.
"Too much."
He put the finger to his own nose, and with a twinkle in his eyes said,
"Just right."
He cupped Kalin's chin in his hand.
"If I were to let you do this, dear one, there would be graves to be dug this night. Our three would be among them, but very noble nonetheless. Thank you for your concern for me."
He put his hand on Richard's shoulder.
"If I were to let you do this, there would be a great many graves to be dug, and the three of us would be the only ones left to do the digging. I am too old to dig that many holes in the ground, and we have more important things to do. But you are very noble, too. You handled yourself honorably."
He patted Richard's shoulder and then put a finger under each of their chins.
"Now, I want you two to let me handle this matter. The problem is not what you are telling these men. The problem is they aren't listening. You have to get their attention before they will hear you."
He lifted an eyebrow and looked to each in turn.
"Watch and learn what you can. Listen to my words, but they will have no effect on you."
He removed his finger and shuffled past them, smiling and waving to the men.
"Gentlemen? Oh, John, how is your little girl?"
"She's fine," he grumbled. "But one of my cows had a two-headed calf."
"Really? And how do you think that happened?"
"I think it's because you're a witch."
"There, you said it again."
Zed shook his head in confusion.
"I don't understand. Do you gentlemen want to do away with me because you think I have magic? Or is it simply your intention to demean me by calling me a woman?"
There was some confusion.
"We don't know what you're talking about," someone said.
"Well, it's simple. Girls are witches, boys are called warlocks. Do you see my point? If you call me a witch, you seem to be calling me a girl. If what you mean is that you think me a warlock, well, that is an altogether different insult. So, which is it, girl or warlock?"
There was more confused discussion. Then John spoke up, angry.
"We mean to say you're a warlock, and we intend to have your eye for it."
"My, my, my,"
Zed said, tapping his lower lip thoughtfully with the tip of his finger.
"Why, I had no idea you men were so brave, so very brave indeed."
"How's that?" John asked.
Zed shrugged.
"Well, what is it you think a warlock capable of?"
There was more talk among themselves. They started shouting out suggestions. "He could make two-headed cows, make the rains come, find people who were lost, make children be stillborn, make strong men weak and make their women leave them." Somehow, this didn't seem to be sufficient, so more ideas were shouted out. "Make water burn, turn people into cripples, change a man into a toad, kill with a look, call upon demons, and in general, everything else."
Zed waited until they were done, and then held his arms out to them.
"There you have it, just as I said. You men are the bravest fellows I have ever seen. To think, armed only with pitchforks and axe handles, you come to do battle with a warlock who has these kinds of powers. My, my, how brave."
His voice trailed off. Zed shook his head in wonderment. Worry started to break out in the crowd. Zed went on in a drawn-out, monotonous tone, suggesting the things a warlock could do, describing in great detail a variety of deeds from the frivolous to the terrifying. The men stood, transfixed, listening in rapt attention. He went on and on for a good half hour. Richard and Kalin listened, shifting their weight as they became bored and tired. The eyes of the mob were wide, unblinking. They stood like statues, the dancing flames from their torches the only motion among the men. The mood had changed. There was no longer anger. Now there was fear. The wizard's voice changed, too. No longer kind and gentle, or even dull. It was hard, threatening.
"And so, men, what do you think it is we should do now?"
"We think you shall let us go home, unharmed," came the weak reply.
The others nodded their agreement. The wizard waggled a long finger in the air in front of them.
"No, I don't think so. You see, you men came here to kill me. My life is the most precious thing I have, and you intended to take it from me. I can't let that go unpunished."
Quaking and fear swept through the crowd. Zed stepped to the edge of the porch. The men took a step back.
"As punishment for trying to take my life, I take from you not your life, but that which is most precious, most dear, most valuable."
With a flourish, he swept his hand dramatically over their heads. They gasped.
"There, it is done," he declared.
Richard and Kalin, who had been leaning against the house, stood up straight. For a moment, no one moved. Then a fellow in the midst of the mob thrust his hand into his pocket and felt around.
"My gold! It's gone!"
Zed rolled his eyes.
"No, no, no, I said the most precious, the most dear, that which you pride above all else."
Everyone stood a moment, confused. Then a few eyebrows went up in alarm. Another man suddenly thrust his hand into his pocket and felt around, eyes wide in fright. He moaned and then fainted. The ones nearby drew back from him. Soon others were putting their hands into their pockets, cautiously feeling around. There were more moans and wails, and soon all the men were grabbing at their crotches in a panic. Zed smiled in satisfaction. Pandemonium broke out among the mob. Men were jumping up and down, crying, grabbing at themselves, running around in little circles, asking for help, falling on the ground and sobbing.
"Now, you men, get out of here! Leave!"
Zed yelled. He turned to Richard and Kalin. An impish grin on his face wrinkled his nose. He winked at them both.
"Please, Zed,"
a few men called out.
"Please, don't leave us like this! Please, help us!"
There were pleas all around. Zed waited a few moments and turned back to them.
"What's this? Do you men think I've been too harsh?"
he asked with mock wonder and sincerity. There was quick agreement that he had been.
"And why do you think this? Have you learned something?"
"Yes!"
John yelled.
"We realize now that Richard was right. You have been our friend. You have never done anything to harm any of us!"
Everyone shouted their agreement.
"You have only helped us, and we acted stupidly. We want to ask your forgiveness. We know, just like Richard said, that we were wrong, that using magic doesn't make you bad. Please, Zed, don't stop being our friend now. Please, don't leave us like this!"
There were more pleas shouted out. Zed tapped a finger on his bottom lip.
"Well..."
He looked up, thinking.
"I guess I could put things back to the way they were."
The men moved closer.
"But only if you all agree to my terms. I think them quite fair, though."
They were ready to agree to anything.
"All right, then. If you agree to tell anyone who speaks up from now on that magic doesn't make a person bad, that their actions are what count, and if you go home to your families and tell them you almost made a terrible mistake tonight and why you were wrong, then you will all be restored. Fair?"
There was nodding from everyone.
"More than fair,"
John said.
Thank you, Zed.
The men turned and began to leave, quickly. Zed stood and watched.
Oh, gentlemen, one more thing.
They froze.
Please, pick up your tools from the ground. I'm an old man. I could easily trip and hurt myself.
They kept a cautious eye to him as they reached out and snatched up their weapons, then turned and walked a ways before breaking into a run. Richard came and waited to one side of Zed, Galen to the other. Zed stood with his hands on his bony hips, watching the men go.
Idiots,
he muttered under his breath. It was dark. The only light came from the front window of the house behind them, and Richard could barely see Zed's face, but he could see it well enough to see he wasn't smiling.
My friends, the old man said, that was a stew stirred by a hidden hand.
Zed, Kaelin asked, diverting her eyes from his face. Did you really make, well, you know, make their manhood vanish? Zed chuckled.
That would be quite the magic. Beyond me, I'm afraid. No, dear one, I only tricked them into thinking I had. Simply convinced them of the truth of it. Let their own minds do the work.
Richard turned to the wizard.
A trick? It was just a trick? I thought you had done real magic.
He seemed somehow disappointed. Zed shrugged.
Sometimes if a trick is done properly, it can work better than magic. In fact, I would go so far as to say a good trick is real magic.
But still, it was just a trick. The wizard held up a finger.
Results, Richard. That's what counts. Your way, those men would have all lost their heads.
Richard grinned. Zed, I think some of them would have preferred that over what you did to them. Zed chuckled. So is that what you wanted us to watch and learn? That a trick can work as well as magic?
Yes, but also something more important. As I said, this was a stew stirred by a hidden hand, the hand of Darkin Rahl. But he has made a mistake tonight. It is a mistake to use insufficient force to finish the job. In so doing, you give your enemy a second chance. That is the lesson I want you to learn. Learn it well. You may not get a second chance when your time comes.
Richard frowned. I wonder why he did it, then. Zed shrugged.
I don't know. Maybe because he doesn't have enough power in this land yet. But then, it also was a mistake to try, because it only served to warn us.
They started toward the door. There was a lot of work to do before they could sleep. Richard began going through the list in his head, but was distracted by an odd feeling. Suddenly, realization washed over him like cold water. Richard inhaled in a gasp. He spun around, eyes wide, and grabbed a fistful of Zed's robes.
We have to get out of here, right now.
What?
Zed, Darkin Rahl isn't stupid. He wants us to feel safe, to feel confident. He knew we were smart enough to beat those men one way or another. In fact, he wanted us to, so we would sit around congratulating ourselves while he comes for us himself. He doesn't fear you. You said he's stronger than a wizard. He doesn't fear the sword, and he doesn't fear Kaelin. He's on his way here, right now. His plan is to get us all at the same time, right now, this very night. He hasn't made a mistake. This was his plan. You said it yourself. Sometimes a trick is better than magic. That's what he's doing. This was all a trick to distract us.
Kaelin's face went white.
Zed, Richard is right. This is how Rahl thinks, the mark of his way. He likes to do things in a manner you do not expect. We have to get out of here this very minute.
Bags! I have been an old fool! You are right. We must leave now, but I can't leave without my rock.
He started off toward the house.
Zed, there's no time!
The old man was already running up the hill, robes and hair flying, off into the darkness. Kaelin followed Richard into the house. They had been lulled into laziness. He couldn't believe how foolish he had been to underestimate Rahl. Snatching up his pack from the corner by the hearth, he ran into his room, checking under his shirt for the tooth. Finding it safe, he came back with his forest cloak. Richard threw it around Kaelin's shoulders and took a quick glance around to see if there was anything else he could grab. But there was no time to think, nothing worth their lives, so he took her by the arm and headed for the door. Outside, in the grass in front of the house, Zed was already back, breathing hard. "What about the rock?" Richard asked. There was no way Zed could lift it, much less carry it.
"In my pocket,"
the wizard said with a smile. Richard couldn't spare the time to wonder at this. The cat was suddenly there, somehow aware of their urgency, rubbing up against their legs. Zed picked it up.
"Can't leave you here, cat. There's trouble coming."
Zed lifted the flap of Richard's pack and tucked the cat inside. Richard had an uneasy feeling. He looked about, scanning the darkness, seeking something out of place, something hidden. He saw nothing, but felt eyes watching. Kaelin noticed his searching.
"What's wrong?"
Even though he could see nothing, he felt the eyes. It must be his fear, he decided.
"Nothing. Let's go."
Richard led them through a sparsely wooded area he knew well enough to walk blindfolded, to the trail he wanted, and turned south. They moved along quickly, in silence, with the exception of Zed muttering occasionally about how stupid he had been. After a while, Kaelin told him he was too reproachful of himself. They had all been fooled, and each felt the sting of blame, but they had made good their escape, and that was all that mattered. It was an easy trail, almost a road, and the company of three walked side by side, Richard in the middle, Zed to his left, Kaelin to his right. The cat poked his head up from Richard's backpack and looked about as they walked. It was a mode of travel he had enjoyed since he was a kitten. The moonlight was enough to light their way. Richard saw a few wayward pines looming against the sky, but he knew there could be no stopping. They had to get away from here. The night was cold, but he was warm enough with the effort of their rapid pace. Kaelin wrapped his cloak tightly around herself. After about a half hour, Zed brought them to a halt. He reached into his robes and pulled out a small handful of powder. He threw it back down the path, the way they had come. Silver sparkles shot from his hand and followed their trail back into the darkness. The sparkles tinkled as they went, disappearing around a bend. Richard started back up the trail.
"What was that?" "Just a little magic dust. It will cover our trail so Rawl won't know where we went."
"He still has the cloud to follow us with."
"Yes, but that will only give him a general area. If we keep moving, it will be of little use to him. It's only when you stop, like you did at my house, that he can hunt you."
They continued on to the south, the trail taking them through sweet-smelling pines and higher into the hill country. At the top of a rise, they all turned suddenly at a roaring sound behind. Off beyond the dark expanse of the forest, in the distance, they saw an immense column of flame shooting skyward, yellows and reds reaching up into the blackness.
"It's my house. Dakin Rawl is there,"
Zed smiled.
"He looks to be angry."
Kaelin touched his shoulder.
"I'm sorry, Zed."
"Don't be, dear one. It's just an old house. It could have been us."
Kaelin turned to Richard as they started out again.
"Do you know where we are going?"
Richard abruptly realized he did.
"I do."
He smiled to himself, glad to be telling the truth. The three figures fled into the dark shadows of the trail, into the night. Overhead, two huge winged beasts watched with hungry, glowing green eyes, and then pitched themselves into steep, silent dives. Wings tucked back for speed, they plummeted toward the backs of their prey. Chapter 11. It was the cat that saved him. He yowled and leapt over Richard's head in a fright, causing him to duck, not enough for the guard to miss him, but enough to deflect the full impact. Still, the claws raked his back painfully and knocked him sprawling face down into the dirt, driving the wind from his lungs in a whoosh. Before he could take a breath, the gar pounced on his back, its weight preventing him from breathing or reaching his sword. Before he went down, he had seen Zed sent tumbling into the trees by a second gar, and now it went crashing through the brush after him. Richard braced himself for the claws he knew would come. Before the gar could rip him open, Kaelin heaved rocks at it from the side of the path. They bounced harmlessly off the beast's head, but it was distracted momentarily. The gar roared, mouth agape, seeming to split the night air with the sound, and held him pinned like a mouse beneath a cat's paw. Richard struggled mightily to lift himself, his lungs burning for air. Blood flies bit his neck. He reached behind, pulling out handfuls of fur, trying to get the great arm off his back. By its size, he knew it had to be a short-tailed gar. It was much bigger than the long-tailed gar he had seen before. The sword was under him, digging painfully into his abdomen. He couldn't get to it. It felt as if the veins in his neck would burst. Richard was beginning to black out. The sounds of yelling and roars from the gar were growing fainter as he struggled. Kaelin got too close in her flurry of rock throwing. The gar reached out with frightening quickness and snatched her by the hair. Doing so caused the beast to shift its weight enough to let Richard gasp desperately for air, but not enough to allow him to move. Kaelin screamed. Out of nowhere, the cat, all teeth and claws, sprang to the gar's face. The cat howled, clawing furiously at the gar's eyes. With one arm holding Kaelin, it lifted the other to swipe at the cat. When it did, Richard rolled to the side and sprang to his feet, drawing his sword. Kaelin screamed again. Richard swung in fury, severing the arm that held her. She tumbled back, free. Howling, the gar backhanded him before he could bring the sword up. The force of the blow sent him flying through the air, landing on his back. Richard sat up, the world spinning and tilting. The sword was gone, thrown into the brush somewhere. The gar was in the center of the trail, wailing in pain and rage as blood gushed from the stump. Glowing green eyes searched frantically for the object of its hate. They locked on Richard. He didn't see Kaelin anywhere. Off to his right, in the trees, there was a sudden blinding flash illuminating everything with intense white light. The violent sound of an explosion hammered painfully into his ears as the concussion from the blast tumbled him against a tree and knocked the gar from its feet. Rolling flames whirled through gaps in the trees. Giant splinters and other debris hurtled past, streaming trailers of smoke. Richard began a frantic search for the sword as the gar came to its feet with a howl. Richard felt around on the ground, desperate and partially blinded from the flash of the explosion. He had enough vision, though, to see the gar coming. His anger flared. He could feel it flare in the sword, too. The sword's magic reached out to him, beckoned by its master. He called it forth, summoned it, hungered for it. It was there, across the trail. He knew it as surely as if he could see it. He knew exactly where it lay as if he were touching it. He scrambled across the trail. Halfway there, the gar kicked him so hard he saw things moving past, but couldn't understand what they were. All he knew for sure was that every breath caused intense pain in his left side. He didn't know where the trail was or where he was in relation to it. Blood flies were bumping into his face. He couldn't get his bearings, but he did know where the Sword of Truth was. He dove for it. For an instant, his fingers touched it. For an instant, he thought he saw Zed. Then the gar had him. It picked him up by his right arm and wrapped its repulsive, warm wings about him, hugging him close, his feet dangling in midair. He cried out from the sharp pain in his left ribs. Glowing green eyes burned into his, and the giant mouth snapped, showing him his fate. The immense maw split open for him, its fetid breath on his face, its black throat waiting. Wet fangs glistened in the moonlight. With all his strength, Richard kicked his boot into the stump of the gar's arm. It threw its head back, howled in pain, and dropped him. Zed emerged at the edge of the trees a dozen yards behind the gar. Richard, on his knees, grabbed the sword. Zed threw his hands out, fingers extended. Fire, wizard's fire, shot from his fingers and came shrieking through the air. The fire grew and tumbled, illuminating everything it passed, becoming a blue and yellow ball of liquid flame that wailed and expanded as it came, a thing alive. It hit the gar's back with a thud, silhouetting the giant beast against the light. Within the space of a breath, the blue and yellow flames washed over the gar, enveloping it, surging through it. Blood flies sparked into nothingness. Fires sizzled and snapped everywhere on the creature, consuming it. The gar disappeared into the blue heat and was gone. The fire swirled a moment, and then it, too, was gone. The smell of burnt fur and a hazy smoke hung in the air. The night was suddenly quiet. Richard collapsed, exhausted and in pain. The gashes on his back had dirt and gravel ground into them, and the pain in his left side seared into him with every breath. He wanted only to lie there, nothing more. The sword was still in his hand. He let the power of it wash through him, sustain him. He allowed the anger of it to let him ignore the pain. The cat licked Richard's face with his rough tongue and nuzzled the top of his head against Richard's cheek. "Thank you, cat," he managed. Zed and Kalin appeared over him. Both bent down to take his arms and help lift him up. "No. You'll hurt me if you do that. Let me get up by myself."
"What's wrong?" Zed asked.
"The gar kicked me in the left side."
"Oh, it hurts. Let me look."
The old man bent over and gently felt Richard's ribs. Richard winced in pain.
"Well, I don't see any bones sticking out. Can't be that bad."
Richard tried not to laugh, as he knew it would hurt. He was right. "Zed, that was no trick. This time it was magic."
"This time it was magic," the wizard confirmed.
"But Darkin Rowell may have seen it too, if he was looking. We have to get out of here. Lie still. Let me see if I can help."
Kalin knelt on his other side and cupped her hand on his, on the hand that held the sword, held the magic. When her hand touched his, he felt a surge of power from the sword that startled him and nearly took his breath away. Somehow, he felt the magic was warning him and trying to protect him. Kalin smiled down at him. She hadn't felt it. Zed put one hand on Richard's ribs and a finger under his chin as he spoke in a soft, calm, reassuring voice. As he listened to Zed, Richard dismissed the sword's reaction to Kalin's touch on his hand. His old friend told him that three of his ribs were injured and that he was putting magic around them to strengthen and protect them until they could heal. He continued to talk in his special way, telling Richard how the pain would be reduced but not gone until the ribs were healed. He spoke more, but the words seemed somehow not to matter. When Zed finished at last, Richard felt as if he were waking from sleep. He sat up. The pain had lessened greatly. He thanked the old man and got to his feet. He put the sword away and picked up the cat, thanking him again. He handed the cat to Kalin for her to hold while he searched for his pack and found it near the side of the trail where it had been thrown in the fight. The gashes on his back were painful, but he would worry about them when they got to where they were going. When the other two weren't looking, he slipped the tooth from his neck and put it in his pocket. Richard asked the other two if they were hurt. Zed seemed insulted by the question. He insisted he wasn't as frail as he looked. Kalin said she was fine, thanks to him. Richard told her he hoped never to get in a rock-throwing contest with her. She gave him a big smile as she put Kat in his backpack. He watched as she picked up the cloak and put it around her shoulders, wondering at the way the sword's magic had reacted when she had touched his hand.
"We had better be leaving," Zed reminded them.
After about a mile, several smaller paths intersected theirs. Richard led them down the one he wanted. The wizard spread more of his magic dust to hide their trail. Their way was narrower now, so they walked single file, with Richard in the lead, Kalin in the middle, and Zed in the rear. The three of them kept a wary eye to the sky as they walked along. Even though it was uncomfortable to do so, Richard walked with his hand on the hilt of the sword. Shadows in the moonlight swept back and forth across the heavy oak door and its iron strap hinges as the wind bowed branches close to the house. Kalin and Zed didn't want to climb the spiked fence, so Richard had left them on the other side to wait. He was just starting to reach up to knock on the door when a big fist grabbed his hair and a knife pressed against his throat. He froze.
"Chase?"
he whispered hopefully. The hand released his hair.
Richard, what are you doing lurking about in the middle of the night? You know better than to sneak up to my place.
I wasn't sneaking. I didn't want to wake the whole house.
There's blood all over you. How much is yours?
Most of it, I'm sorry to say. Chase, go unlock your gate. Kalen and Zed are waiting out there. We need you. Chase, cursing as he stepped on twigs and acorns with his bare feet, unlocked the gate and shepherded them all into the house. Emma Branstone, Chase's wife, was a kind, friendly woman, always wearing a smile on her bright face. She seemed the complete opposite of Chase. Emma would be mortified if she thought she had intimidated anyone, while Chase's day wouldn't be complete unless he had. Emma was like Chase in one respect, though. Nothing ever seemed to surprise or fluster her. She was typically unruffled at this late hour as she stood in her long white nightdress, her gray streaked hair tied back, making tea as the rest of them sat at the table. She smiled, as if it were normal to have blood-streaked guests come visiting in the middle of the night. But then, with Chase, it sometimes was. Richard hung his pack over the back of his chair, taking the cat out and handing him to Kalen. She put him in her lap, where he immediately began purring as she stroked his back. Zed sat to his other side. Chase put his shirt on over his big frame and lit several lamps that hung from heavy oak beams. Chase had felled the trees, hewed the beams out, and placed them by himself. The names of the children were carved along the side of one. Behind his chair at the table was a fireplace made of stones he had collected in his travels over the years. Each had a unique shape, color, and texture. Chase would tell anyone who would listen where each had come from and what sort of trouble he had encountered in retrieving it. A simple wooden bowl full of apples sat in the center of the stout pine table. Emma removed the bowl of apples and replaced it with a pot of tea and a jar of honey, then passed around mugs. She told Richard to remove his shirt and turn his chair so she could clean his wounds, a task not unfamiliar to her. With a stiff brush and hot, soapy water, she scrubbed his back as if she were cleaning a dirty kettle. Richard bit his bottom lip, holding his breath at times, and scrunched his eyes closed in pain as she worked. She apologized for hurting him, but said she had to get all the dirt out or it would be worse later. When she was finished cleaning the gashes, she patted his back dry with a towel and applied a cool salve while Chase got him a clean shirt. Richard was glad to put the shirt on, as it provided him at least a symbol of protection from her further ministering. Emma smiled to the three guests.
Would anyone like something to eat?
Zed lifted a hand.
Well, I wouldn't mind.
Richard and Kalen both shot him a withering glare. He shrank back into his chair.
No, nothing for us. Thank you.
Emma stood behind Chase, combing her fingers affectionately through his hair. He sat in undisguised agony, barely able to tolerate her public display of sentiment. At last, he leaned forward, using the excuse of pouring tea to put a stop to it. With a frown, Chase pushed the honey across the table.
Richard, for as long as I've known you, you've had a talent for sidestepping trouble, but lately, you seem to be losing your footing.
Before Richard could answer, Lee, one of their daughters, appeared in the doorway, rubbing her sleepy eyes with her fists. Chase scowled at her. She pouted back. Chase sighed.
You've got to be the ugliest child I've ever seen.
Her pout turned to a beaming grin. Lee ran over to him, threw her arms around his leg, put her head on his knee, and hugged it tight. He mussed her hair.
Back to bed with you, little one.
Wait,
Zed spoke up.
Lee, come here.
She went around the table.
My old cat has been complaining that he has no children to play with.
Lee stole a peek toward Kalen's lap.
Do you know of any children he could visit?
The girl's eyes widened.
Zed, he could stay here. He would have fun with us.
Really? Well, then he will stay here for a visit.
All right, Lee, Emma said. Off to bed with you. Richard looked up. Emma, could you do me a favor? Do you have any traveling clothes Kaylin could borrow? Emma looked Kaylin over. Well, her shoulders are too big for my clothes, and her legs are too long. But the older girls have things I think would work nicely. She smiled warmly at Kaylin and held out a hand. Come on, dear, let's see what we can find. Kaylin handed Kat to Lee and took her other hand. I hope Kat won't be a bother. He insists on sleeping on your bed with you. Oh, no, Lee said earnestly. That will be fine. As they left the room, Emma knowingly shut the door. Chase took a sip of tea.
Well?
Well, you know the conspiracy my brother was talking about? It's worse than he knows.
That's so, Chase said noncommittally.
Richard pulled the sword of truth from its scabbard and laid it on the table between them. The polished blade gleamed. Chase leaned forward and put his elbows on the table, lifting the sword with his fingertips. He let it roll into his palms, inspecting it closely, running his fingers over the word truth on the hilt and down the fuller on each side of the blade, testing the sharpness of the edge. He betrayed nothing more than mild curiosity.
Not unusual for a sword to be named, but typically the name is engraved on the blade. I've never seen the name put on the hilt.
Chase was waiting for someone else to say something consequential.
Chase, you've seen this sword before, Richard admonished. You know what it is.
I have, but I've never seen it this close.
His eyes came up, dark and intense.
The point is, Richard, what are you doing with it?
Richard peered back with equal intensity.
It was given to me by a great and noble wizard.
Chase's forehead wrinkled into a sober frown. He looked to Zed.
What's your part in this, Zed?
Zed leaned forward, a small smile on his thin lips.
I'm the one who gave it to him.
Chase leaned back in his chair, shaking his head slowly.
The spirits be praised, he whispered. A real seeker, at last.
We don't have much time, Richard said. I need to know some things about the boundary. Chase let out a deep sigh as he rose and went to the hearth. He leaned an arm on the mantel, staring into the flames. The other two waited while the big man picked at the rough wood of the mantel, as if trying to pick his words.
Richard, do you know what my job is?
Richard shrugged.
Keeping people away from the boundary for their own good.
Chase shook his head.
Do you know how to get rid of wolves?
Go out and hunt them, I guess.
The boundary warden shook his head again.
That might get a few, but more would be born, and in the end you have just as many. If you really want to have fewer wolves, you hunt their food. You trap rabbits, so to speak. It's easier. If there is less food, fewer pups will be born. In the end, you have fewer wolves. That's my job. I hunt rabbits.
Richard felt a wave of fright ripple through him.
Most people don't understand the boundary or what we do. They think it's just some stupid law we enforce. Many are afraid of the boundary, mostly older people. Many others think they know what's best and go up there to poach. They aren't afraid of the boundary, so we make them afraid of the wardens. That's something real to them, and we keep it real. They don't like it, but out of fear of us, they stay away. To a few, it's a game to see if they can get away with it. We don't expect to catch them all. We don't really care. What we care about is scaring enough of them so the wolves in the boundary won't have enough rabbits to get stronger. We protect the people, but not by preventing them from going into the boundary. Anyone stupid enough to do that is beyond our help. Our job is to keep most away, keep the boundary weak enough so the things in there can't come out and get everyone else. The wardens have all seen things that have gotten loose. We all understand. Others don't. Lately, More and more things have been getting loose. Your brother's government may pay us, but they don't understand either. Our allegiance is not to them, nor to any rule of law. Our only duty is to protect the people from the things that come out of the darkness. We consider ourselves sovereign. We take orders when it doesn't hinder our job. It keeps matters friendly. But if the time ever comes, well, we follow our own cause, our own orders. He sat back at the table, leaning forward on his elbows. Ultimately, there is only one whose orders we will follow, because our cause is a part of his larger cause. That one is the true seeker. He picked up the sword in his big hands and held it out to Richard, looking him in the eyes. I pledge my life and loyalty to the seeker.